Good health and a healthy gut go hand in hand. When everything is working just the way it should, we think very little about the process of digestion, the critical function of breaking down food into smaller components and changing it chemically so that our bodies are nourished. When all goes well, nutrients supply our cells with sustenance and energy so that our body can develop, repair, and maintain itself. This is why your gut matters. We are going to continue reading today from the Mayo Clinic Gut Health Special Issue with a focus on the process of digestion and an explanation of microbiome and microbiota. Digestion at work. Your digestive tract is a series of hollow connected organs, including the esophagus, stomach, small intestine, and colon. Together, they form a long, convoluted passageway extending from the mouth to the anus, where solid waste exits the body. Organs such as the salivary glands, pancreas, liver, and gallbladder also serve essential functions in the digestive process. Along this tract, muscular contractions move food along through successive stages of the digestive process. Valves at critical junctures control the amount of food that can be moved forward and prevent food from moving backward. A network of nerves and glandular cells regulates much of this activity, including the release of enzymes and digestive juices. When food is broken down, nutrients are absorbed into your blood via tiny pores in the intestinal wall. The nutrients are transported in the bloodstream to nourish your body's cells. When problems occur, certain signs and symptoms may point to any number of possible causes, making a diagnosis difficult and your life miserable. The tasks at hand for you and your doctor during a medical visit are to identify all of the possibilities and, often through a process of elimination, focus on the most likely cause. In the pages that follow, we describe the different digestive organs and their relationships to one another. This knowledge may help you better understand the complexities of the digestive process and why problems develop. Salivary glands. Digestion actually starts even before you take your first bite. The aroma of the food you're about to eat, or are thinking about eating, is enough to get saliva in your mouth flowing. You have three pairs of large salivary glands, in addition to smaller glands located in the lining of your mouth. When you take a bite of food, your glands pump out saliva containing the enzyme amylase that begins to chemically break down the food. Your teeth crunch and grind the food while your tongue mixes it with the saliva. These actions transform a bite of food into a bolus, a soft, moist, rounded mixture suitable for swallowing. You control many aspects of the digestive process at the beginning, what you put into your mouth, how long you chew it, and when you swallow. But once you swallow, the rest of the digestive process is controlled by your nervous system. Esophagus. When you swallow, muscles in your mouth and throat propel food through a relaxed ring of muscle, upper esophageal sphincter, that connects the back of your throat, pharynx, to your upper esophagus. The esophagus, commonly referred to as the food pipe, is a tube about 10 inches long that connects your throat and stomach. Gravity alone isn't sufficient to move food through the esophagus. Help comes from muscles in the wall of the esophagus that move in synchronized waves, one after another, propelling the food towards your stomach. Muscles above the swallowed food contract, squeezing it downward, while muscles below the food relax to allow it to advance without resistance. This pattern of progressive contraction and relaxation is called peristalsis. Peristalsis is a coordinated muscular action that continues through your entire digestive tract. As food reaches the lower portion of your esophagus, it approaches the lower esophageal sphincter, LES. When you're not eating, this muscle valve remains tightly closed to keep stomach acid from flowing backward, regurgitating, into your esophagus and causing heartburn. The act of swallowing signals the valve to relax and open in order to let food pass through on its way to your stomach. In some people, food doesn't move down the tract as it should, or the LES doesn't relax, resulting in swallowing difficulties, dysphagia. Dysphagia most often occurs because the esophagus has become narrowed, often due to excessive acid exposure. Narrowing of the esophagus is known as a stricture. Stomach. Your stomach sits in the upper area of your abdomen, just under your rib cage. A hollow muscular sac, the typical stomach can expand to hold about a gallon of food and liquid. When your stomach is empty, its tissues fold in on themselves a bit like a closed accordion. As your stomach fills, the folds disappear. Your stomach performs two functions in the digestive process. It continues to break food down into smaller pieces, and it acts as a storehouse, gradually releasing food into the small intestine, where most chemical digestion and absorption takes place. Generally, it takes your stomach about 4 hours to empty after a nutritious meal. It may take 6 hours or more if the meal has a lot of fat. Even before food arrives, digestive juices in the stomach begin flowing. At the first sight, smell, and taste of food, your brain sends messages along the vagus nerve indicating that food will be arriving soon. The messages trigger the release of a chemical called acetylcholine along the nerves and muscles lining the stomach. This chemical sets off a chain reaction that causes your stomach muscles to start contracting and signals your gastric glands to produce digestive juices. By the time food arrives from your esophagus, conditions are ready for the next stage of digestion. The muscles in your upper stomach relax to allow food and liquid to enter. The stomach walls, which are lined with three layers of powerful muscles, then begin churning the food, mixing it into smaller and smaller pieces. Gastric juices released from the glands lining the walls of your stomach help break down the food into a thick, creamy fluid called chyme. In a normal day, your stomach produces 2 to 3 quarts of gastric juices. Hydrochloric acid is one of many kinds of gastric juices. This acid would be very corrosive in your stomach if it weren't for a layer of sticky mucus that acts as a protective force clinging to your stomach walls. Hydrochloric acid kills harmful bacteria and microorganisms swallowed with the food. Gastric juices also contain pepsin, a protein digesting enzyme. An imbalance in protective forces and damaging forces in the stomach lining can damage the lining, resulting in conditions such as erosion or an ulcer. Two products that are absorbed directly into your bloodstream from your stomach are aspirin and alcohol, both of which pass quickly through the stomach lining with little trouble. Once your food is well mixed, rippling waves of muscles in your stomach walls push the stomach contents down toward the pyloric valve, which opens into your small intestine. The pyloric valve, another ring-like sphincter muscle, opens just enough to allow your stomach to release less than 1/8 of an ounce of food at a time into the small intestine. The rest of the contents is held back for more mixing. Small intestine, pancreas, liver, and gallbladder. The small intestine is a winding tube about 20 feet long that fills much of your abdomen. It's here that the chemical breakdown of the food you eat is completed and where most nutrients are absorbed into your bloodstream. The small intestine is divided into 3 parts, duodenum, jejunum, and ileum. Duodenum. Food released from your stomach passes into the duodenum. This is the location where the chemical breakdown of food is the most intensive. Here, digestive juices converge from the pancreas, liver, and gallbladder and mix with juices secreted from the walls of the small intestine to carry out the breakdown. The lining of the duodenum contains enzymes, for example, lactase, that can break down simple sugars. The duodenum absorbs only small amounts of nutrients through its intestinal walls. Muscular contractions continue moving food waste through the digestive tract. Pancreas. The pancreas is a soft, pink-colored gland that's located behind the stomach. The pancreas is shaped a bit like a fish, with a wide head, a tapering body, and a narrow tail. In addition to other secretions, the pancreas produces 2 important types of enzymes. two important types of digestive substances. They are digestive enzymes that are secreted into your upper duodenum and help break down your main energy sources, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. The hormones insulin and glucagon, which are secreted into your bloodstream and help regulate your metabolism, including levels of blood sugar or glucose. Liver. The liver is a large organ about the size of a football, located just under your rib cage on the right side of your abdomen. It's a virtual chemical factory that performs hundreds of functions. Those functions include storing the nutrients from digested food, as well as filtering and processing potentially toxic substances you consume, such as alcohol, chemicals, and most medications. The liver also produces bile, a yellowish-green solution that helps break down fat so that it can be absorbed into your blood. Bile is what gives your stools their brown, green, or yellowish color. This variation in color is normal. Stools that appear red or black, however, may indicate bleeding within the digestive tract. Gallbladder. Your gallbladder is a small, translucent sac that lies adjacent to your liver. The organ is a key part of the biliary tract, a system for transporting bile to the small intestine. The gallbladder functions as a reservoir for bile produced in your liver before the fluid drains into the duodenum. Bile is produced continuously in your liver, even when your body isn't digesting food. Excess bile is turned into a more concentrated, potent solution in the gallbladder when some of the water that makes up bile is absorbed. When food passes into your duodenum, a hormone signals the gallbladder to release its stored bile. You can lead a perfectly normal life without a gallbladder. Your liver will still make enough bile to digest your food. Jejunum and ileum. The middle section of the small intestine is called the jejunum. It is within this middle section where many nutrients are absorbed from food and pass into your bloodstream. The final section of the small intestine is called the ileum. The primary duty of the ileum is to absorb remaining nutrients from food waste. Absorption of vitamin B12, an essential vitamin, occurs in the last few feet of the ileum, called the terminal ileum. Bile acids also are absorbed in the terminal ileum. When bile acids aren't removed, they pass into the large intestine and may cause diarrhea. The jejunum and ileum contain a variety of bacteria that aid in food digestion and nutrient absorption. Researchers are finding that a healthy balance of bacteria is beneficial not only to good digestion, but also to your health in general. The journey of food through the small intestine generally takes between 30 minutes and 3 hours, depending on the composition of your meal. Colon. The colon is also known as the large intestine. Its job is to store and remove all food waste that your body can't digest. The colon is shorter than the small intestine, but its diameter is greater and almost completely frames your small intestine. There are 4 sections of the colon: ascending, transverse, descending, and sigmoid. Food enters your colon through what's known as the ileocecal valve, located at the end of your small intestine. This muscular valve prevents food waste from returning to the ileum. By the time food waste reaches the colon, your body has absorbed nearly all of the nutrients it can. What remains are water, electrolytes such as sodium and chloride, and waste products such as plant fiber, bacteria, and dead cells shed from the lining of your digestive tract. During the time that food waste passes through your colon, your body absorbs nearly all of the water from the waste. The remaining residue, stool, is usually soft but formed. It's also loaded with bacteria, which are useful to your body as long as your colon wall remains intact. These bacteria can cause certain food products to ferment, producing gas. This gas is mainly an odorless mixture. The odors come from certain foods, especially those rich in sulfur, such as garlic and cabbage, or those that contain sulfur-based preservatives, such as bread, beer, and potato chips. As the food residue moves through your colon, muscle contractions separate and condense the waste into smaller segments. After each meal, considerable movement takes place in the descending colon, pushing the segments through your lower colon and into the rectum. As your rectum begins to fill and stretch with waste, it signals your brain that it's time to release stool. Sphincter muscles in your anus, along with the muscles that make up your pelvic floor, serve as a final valve. The sphincter muscles relax as the muscles in your pelvic floor and rectum contract to increase pressure and expel stool from your body. Sometimes you need to exert additional pressure on the colon and rectum by using your abdominal muscles. If the muscle groups don't function in synchronization, it can become difficult to expel stool, a condition that leads to constipation. The human digestive system is incredibly complex. However, doctors and researchers continue to make new discoveries in regard to common gastrointestinal problems, why they occur, who's most at risk, and the best ways to treat them. Too often, people live with their problems for a long time before seeking medical advice because they believe that what they're experiencing is a normal part of digestion. As an example, if you take antacids regularly, perhaps daily, and you've been doing so for several months or even years, make an appointment to see your doctor. Daily heartburn isn't normal. Plus, the earlier you address a problem, generally the easier it is to treat and to keep from becoming serious. For many individuals, simple lifestyle changes, from improving your diet to reducing stress, can go a long way toward maintaining healthy digestion. We move to a new chapter on the gut microbiome. In discussions of how the digestive system impacts our health, you'll see the terms microbiota and microbiome used a lot. Microbiota refers to all of the different microorganisms that live in a particular environment. For example, your gut houses mainly bacteria, but microorganisms such as viruses and fungi also call it home. These microorganisms provide many benefits, including strengthening the digestive tract, providing nutrients such as vitamins, regulating metabolism, and protecting you from invaders that can cause disease. Gut microorganisms also play a role in communication with your immune system and regulating immunity. The gut microbiome is the total environment of your gut, which includes not only specific microorganisms, but also their genetic components and their surroundings. Think of it as an ecosystem, and much like the ecosystem of Iceland varies from that of Brazil, so too does the environment of the gut vary from person to person. The formation of this microbial ecosystem begins early on. Research suggests that prior to being born, our digestive tracts are almost like a blank slate. With birth, many outside influences begin to help shape the makeup of our guts. For example, an infant born via a vaginal delivery will have gut bacteria that differ from an infant born via a cesarean section. This is because the mother passes along bacteria to her child during a vaginal delivery. Babies who are breastfed will have a different gut makeup from babies who consume formula. By the time a child is a toddler, he or she will have a gut microbiota that resembles and is as diverse as an adult's. All told, our bodies house about 100 trillion gut microorganisms, including several hundred different species of bacteria. For the most part, gut microbiota remain stable, but certain factors can change this, for example, medications or a change in diet. Aging also can have an impact because the gut's microbiota tend to become less diverse as we get older. This increases the chances of conditions resulting from decreased diversity in the gut, such as Clostridium difficile infections. An imbalance may also be linked to other gastrointestinal illnesses, allergies, obesity, and other metabolic problems, and neurological issues. The changing gut. When something changes the balance of your gut bacteria with the potential to cause harm, this is known as dysbiosis. This imbalance can lead to the gut being overpopulated by potentially damaging microbiota, which can interfere with the normal functioning of beneficial gut microbiota in charge of maintaining your health, and lead to the gut being overpopulated by potentially harmful microbiota. Diet. As you might expect, diet plays a huge part in the makeup of our gut microbiota. Today, it's becoming more common for people around the world to follow a westernized diet, a diet that features increased amounts of fast foods and sugar, and decreased amounts of fiber, fruits, and vegetables. Researchers have noted that with an increase in people following a Western diet, there's been an uptick in incidence of disease, including cancer, obesity, autoimmune disorders, inflammatory bowel disease, and allergies. This may be associated with alterations in the gut bacteria related to diet. Some research has shown that diets high in saturated fats can change the structure and diversity of the gut microbiota, reducing certain bacteria that help prevent obesity. Such diets may also lead to gut inflammation. Problems can also arise when we restrict our diets. For example, in recent years, people who don't have a gluten intolerance or celiac disease have been avoiding foods containing gluten. One study found that after 4 weeks on a gluten-free diet, the makeup of participants' gut microbiota had changed, with most having lower numbers of several vital beneficial microbiota species. Food additives may also play a part in harming gut microbiota. Sweeteners such as sucralose, aspartame, and saccharin are much sweeter and have minimal calories compared with sugar, but they may disturb the balance and diversity of your gut. In one study, rats given sucralose had much higher proportions of potentially harmful bacteria in their guts than rats that didn't eat sucralose. Emulsifiers, which are added to processed foods to increase shelf life, have also been shown to decrease gut diversity. Both artificial sweeteners and emulsifiers may increase inflammatory responses in the gut. One cornstarch-based sweetener called trehalose was thought by some researchers to be behind an epidemic of Clostridium difficile infections. On the opposite end of the spectrum, high-fiber plant-based diets have been shown to be the most gut-friendly. One example is the Mediterranean diet, which focuses on fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and healthy fats, such as olive oil and canola oil. Red meat, if eaten, is limited to just a few times a month with this diet. Fiber in particular is important because it can boost diversity in the gut. Medication. Almost all medications can affect gut microbiota, primarily by altering the gut environment. Some examples include antibiotics and proton pump inhibitors, PPIs, that can produce harmful changes. Antibiotics, in particular, are known for their ability to affect the gut microbiome, causing a shift that favors the colonization of certain bacteria that can lead to antibiotic-associated diarrhea and the debilitating Clostridium difficile infection. There are many different types of antibiotics, dosages, and lengths of treatment, and each of these factors will impact the gut in their own way. Oftentimes, the gut microbiome will return to its original state after taking an antibiotic. However, some research has found that exposure to antibiotics, especially in the prenatal or early life stage, can cause a long-term shift in your gut's microbiome and can increase the risk of infection, metabolic conditions, allergies, and antibiotic resistance. These effects may last years after medication exposure. Smoking. Smoking is harmful to many aspects of human health. It can also negatively impact microbiota composition and cause intestinal inflammation. Quitting smoking can reverse this and increase diversity in your gut. Stress. Your gut and your brain are connected by a shared pathway that allows them to communicate with one another about things such as hormones, inflammation, and brain chemicals. Stress can negatively impact this line of communication and increase the risk of a gut imbalance. Home environment. In particular, having pets or farm animals may influence your gut makeup, though typically in a positive way. Studies have noted a lower incidence in pediatric allergies in homes where there are pets or among farm children. The theory is that animals may help to desensitize young, developing immune systems. Some studies also have found microbiota to be more diverse and rich in infants whose households contain pets. How animals affect adults isn't known. We have time for a little column called Appetite, Hunger, and Feeling Full. Appetite is that pleasant feeling that lets you know it's time to eat. Hunger comes later, perhaps when you've gone past your normal mealtime and your body tells you so with unpleasant hunger pangs. Appetite and hunger work together to keep you eating regularly. Your sensations of appetite and hunger are controlled by a part of your brain called the hypothalamus. A portion of the food you eat is converted into blood sugar, glucose. When your blood sugar level drops, the hypothalamus notices and sends nerve impulses along the vagus nerve to your stomach. These impulses trigger the release of gastric juices and set in motion the muscle contractions that produce hunger pangs. You may hear your stomach rumbling as juices and air pass through your intestines. This rumbling sound is normal. If you aren't able to eat right away, these sensations gradually wear off and you may not feel hungry again for several hours. But later in the day, when it's time for your next meal, you may feel famished. Once you've eaten, your brain recognizes when you're full. As your stomach fills and stretches to its normal capacity, it signals that your hunger has been satisfied. And that is why your gut matters. It may seem more like a lesson in biology today, but I was hoping that knowing how all of these parts work together, that should you have any issues with your digestion, like inflammatory bowel disease or irritable bowel syndrome, that these would help you diagnose the mystery of what's going on and give you more ideas of what to talk about when you do get to see your doctor sometime. Thank you for tuning into Sound Body today. Stay well and come back next week for more healthy living ideas.